Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
This is our first night using the sound system, so I don't know if it... Can you hear in the back? It's good, conversationally. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting on pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're talking about step 10, and I'm gonna turn the meeting over to Graham.
Hi, everyone, I'm Graham Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Graham.
And I'd like to welcome everybody here tonight. And David and I haven't sat and done this for a while. We had another speaker lined up, but the guy said because it was raining he couldn't come. So I'm from Scotland, so that excuse doesn't really carry much weight with me. But anyway, if he thinks he's in danger, it's better that he doesn't come. But yeah, so welcome everybody. And tonight we're going to be talking about step 10. And David and I started this meeting up almost a year ago now in his living room. And the reason we did that was we were just kind of frustrated with really a lack of AA and AA meetings. And we had, from our own experience, from my own experience, had felt that AA is such a simple program of action. And that's why the group's called the Simple Actions. And there's a lot of confusion about what alcoholism is and what AA suggests we do to recover from it. And so we wanted the guys that we sponsor just to get together once a week and talk about the steps in a simple, straightforward way out the book, not seeking to teach anybody or set ourselves up as some sort of authorities on AA. That's ridiculous if you know me and him. So that's not where this was coming from. It was just from a desire to share our experience with other people. And anyway, so now we're here and we've got these microphones and it's great. But I'll just start off by reading step 10. And this, of course, presumes that I've taken the first 9 steps. Okay, so I've presumably got a sponsor and done steps 1 through 9, or at least working on my 9 step amends. So it starts off, page 84, if you're following along in the book, page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So, it starts off the paragraph saying this thought. What thought? Well, the thought in the previous paragraph is talking about doing amends. That's what it's talking about. It's talking about doing amends and about working, this idea of working, which is kind of disappointing to me because that's one of my least favourite things, is working. I like not working. I've often wondered why somebody can't just put about 10 grand a month in my bank account and just leave me alone. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be set up that way for me. So suggesting I have to do some work here. And how step 10 has looked for me is it's really introducing this idea that alcohol wasn't the problem, right? We've identified that by now. This is an ongoing problem that I have called alcoholism. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And liquor was just a symptom. It wasn't really the problem. The great news that we have for you is if you have a drink problem, then there's the door, goodbye. Just stop drinking, you'll be fine. That's the message of AA. If you have a drink problem, you never need to come to one of these meetings ever again. Just don't drink, you'll be fine. AA is for people like me. I don't have a drink problem. I have a sober problem, which drinking solved. So now I can't drink, because when I drink, things get pretty weird really fast. I love drinking. I love to guzzle booze. That's really my mode of operation. I've always loved to just guzzle it. And then things get really crazy and I start doing crazy stuff. I usually go into a blackout and start attacking people. It's usually what I do. And then eventually I come to, I'm terribly ashamed. I wish that had never happened. And then I'm usually drunk within 4 or 5 days again after saying I'm not going to behave like that again. I'm a binge drinker. That's the way it was for me. And I just got caught in that cycle. And I didn't realize until I came to AA what was actually wrong with me. And what's wrong with me is I can't stand being sober. I've never liked it. I just don't like this place where I find myself, you know, and where I find myself is right here. That's really where I spend most of my time. It's just right about here, thinking about me and how I feel and how this all relates to me. And so step 10 recognizes that. It recognizes that I'm going to continue to suffer from selfishness, to be selfish, to be dishonest, to be resentful, and to be afraid. I'm going to continue to experience these things, which for me, a lot of, you know, in AA for years, I remember really struggling with this, because what I was hearing in the meetings was, I've never had a bad day sober. And what was going on up here was, I'm very resentful and I want to kill that guy over there, or I'm absolutely terrified because I spent all my money and I'm 7 years sober and there's an eviction notice on my door because I didn't pay the rent. I'm afraid. I'm being dishonest in sobriety and I'm behaving selfishly. And what I hear in the meetings is, I've never had a bad day sober. Keep coming back. We'll love you till you love yourself. And when I bring any of this stuff to these people in AA, I feel like they're judging me. You know, oh, you're just not doing it right. If you don't feel happy, you're not doing it right. And so I'm somebody that has continued to have these problems in sobriety. But the great thing about step 10 and the great thing about being in AA is that in spite of this, I haven't had to drink for over 15 years. And, you know, I don't take happy pills prescribed by me or somebody in a white coat. And I'm not currently under the direction of a therapist or a psychiatrist. And if that's your bag, that's fine. I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying that I just come to AA and I don't drink. And so I've been able to deal with these things, and it gives me a very simple formula on what to do. And let me just run one past you that happened recently. I was talking to some guys about it. This was last week. I was resentful at David, okay? And it started off in the shower one morning. It was probably like, now hold on, stay with me. Come on, please. So I'm in the shower, and I think what had happened was I was like sponsoring this guy, and the guy relapsed, and then David took him to a meeting after his relapse, and I didn't, because I was at home, and my wife was expecting me to stay at home with the children or whatever. And in the shower, this is what's going on in my head. Who does David think he is? That's my guy. And he went and took him to the meeting. Who does he think he is? He made me look bad in front of those other guys. That's what's going on up here. And I'm not telling anybody about this. Now, you know, this man probably has saved my life with his enthusiasm for AA. I've known him, I don't know how, seven, eight years. And he's kept me going in some really rough patches. He's been there for me. Some of the most difficult times in my life. And this is what's going on in my head in the shower. Are you kidding me? No, that's how my head operates. It just picks people and they do think they do something I don't think they should do. And then it starts. Well, I'm not going to call him today. You know, I'll punish you with silence. That's my favorite one. That's my favorite weapon. I'm just not talking to you. When I see you at the meeting, I'm going to turn the other way. So, yeah, I know this is just me, right? Nobody else does this. You're all spiritual giants. So anyway, the bottom line is, and I caught myself doing that, and then was able to laugh about it and ask God, you know, God, this is ridiculous. What's going on here? And then I was able to start talking to some other guys in AA about it and kind of laugh at myself. And they were able to share some stuff that was going on in their head, proving to me that it isn't just me that indulges in this kind of thinking or is afflicted with this kind of thinking. And I didn't need to make amends to him because he didn't know until now that I was doing this. And then it tells me what to do. It tells me to turn my thoughts to someone I can help. And what that looks like a lot for me during the day is calling people. I just start calling a few people in AA and ask them how they're doing. And that sometimes gets me out of myself enough to kind of move away from this, you know? And so it really helps me to do this. And I can honestly tell you, on a daily basis, I'm talking to at least, I don't know, four or five guys a day. And I have like two or three guys that I can pretty much tell absolutely anything to. Because my problem is that I want you to think I'm a certain way. And then I start pretending and lying to try and keep up that image in you. So I start not telling you stuff I'm doing that I'm ashamed of, or I'll start making up stuff that I'm not even doing to try and impress you. It's bizarre, but that's what I do, left to my own devices. So the great thing about these relationships with these men in AA is that even when I do fall short and I'm doing things I shouldn't do or I'm not doing things I should be doing, I can talk to somebody about it and be honest about it. And that seems to be the start of changing it.
Thanks. I can't tell you how happy I am to be resented for doing the right thing, you know? and then to have it displayed in public. I mean, I'm just up here like, yeah, who's better than me in AA? You know what I mean? You know, I mean, I want to grab a hold of that stuff, put that on my resume, you know? I mean, because I'm like Graham, I never came out of a blackout walking little old ladies across the street or doing charity work or anything like that. In fact, I didn't even know what a blackout was until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I just thought that was drinking. It's just normal to not remember everything that happened the night before. You know, I mean, that's just drinking. It's normal to call the people that you were with and put the missing pieces together, you know. What happened after Kevin jumped out the window? Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, God, that's right. Oh, gee, oh God, I hope, you know. I hope nobody saw me do that, you know. I would never say I'm not going to drink anymore or I'll never do that again. I just hope nobody saw me do it, you know, whatever it was. But I love getting drunk. I absolutely, I see no point in whatever social drinking, whatever that looks like, whatever that means to people. I don't even understand that. Social drinking to me is just being absolutely, completely falling down drunk, proximal to other human beings, near people, drunk, you know? I mean, I don't want a warm glow. I don't want I don't want a little catch a little buzz, you know, and then this is good. I think I'm good. I think this is where I want to stop. I've never had that experience. Or if I had the experience, it was not the desired experience. You know, I like to get drunk. That's what drinking is. That's all it'll ever be to me. And I think it's a fairly simple problem that we have with a fairly simple solution. I really do believe that the only reason I'm an alcoholic is once I start drinking, I don't stop. And when I stop drinking, I got a mind that'll talk me into having one. And it'll sound good to me. It'll sound good enough to get one in me. And that's really the dilemma that we're on. And so once we've been through all the mangling that alcoholism has for us, all the broken promises and broken bones and missed appointments and missed opportunities and just the loss and the grief and the pain of just walking that off on a day-to-day basis, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, I need to stop drinking, you know? And so that's what I did. I stopped drinking. And I would put the plug in the jug. And I was able to stay sober for significant periods of, stay abstinent of alcohol for significant periods of time. I did not want, I've always described myself as a reluctant member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not come in here and fall in love with you people. You know, I didn't have that experience of walking through the door and feeling like I was home. Oh, these are my people. I found my tribe. I did not feel that way. I found it completely unfortunate that a smart, you know, guy like me ended up with all you losers. And, you know, I didn't really need to be here. I don't want your phone number, thank you very much. And I got enough friends. And I did not want to accept the simple idea that I got a problem that I can't solve. That's the piece, and that's what you guys told me the day I got here. David, if you're an alcoholic, you may be able to stop for periods of time, but the clock's ticking, you're going to drink again. You can't solve the problem by yourself. I summarily dismissed that. So, back to this paragraph in step 10. And I mention all that because I do kind of subscribe to the idea that alcohol gets an honorable mention in Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to let you know that I drank a bit, and I tried to stop for a long time. I mean, drinking was not good for me for a long time. And so it took 6 years for me to take step one, the first part. I'm still working on the second part. And, you know, and so 6 years to come to believe that maybe something other than me could restore me to sanity. And I've always talked about being an atheist, a reluctant believer in anything other than my own mind. And so you guys brought me along very simply into that fourth step. We can turn your will and your life over to the care of these steps, David, and let's walk them off. So we've done our inventory. We've done our fifth step. We've offered our defects to God as we understand Him in prayer. We've gone out and knocked on the doors, started paying the money back, and life by now is getting pretty good. We've started to experience some of these promises, and which Graham pointed out will always materialize if we work for them. And that happened with me. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory. We continue to set right any new mistakes that go along as we vigorously, he uses some fantastic language in here, vigorously commence this way of living. That's another thing, right? Where we talk about AA being a way of life. It's a way of living. What does that mean? Going to meetings? You know, what does that mean? Calling alcoholics three times a day? I think in this context, he's talking about the way of living is this trying to practice these steps in our life. You know, of taking inventory and making amends and having a prayer life and paying the money back. So we vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We've just entered the world of the Spirit. So he tells me that our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So what is that? You know, I does that mean I need to read another book? You know, I need to gain more understanding? My experience is that if we just practice these things, if we just continue to do these things, we continue to willing to show up and not only have the experience ourselves, but help other alcoholics have this experience, I think that's how we grow in understanding and effectiveness. I think that I'm a better sponsor than I was a few years ago, you know? I think I have a better understanding of how to apply these things to my life because I make mistakes all the time. All the time. And what was pointed out to me was this is not an overnight matter, which I don't like. It should continue for a lifetime. And then he just says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And he doesn't say if these crop up, it says when these crop up. When these crop up. So selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear was pointed out to me as step 4. when we ask God at once to remove them is step 6 and 7, you know, asking him to take our defects. We discuss them with someone immediately, sounds like step 5, and we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone, sounds like steps 8 and 9. So what was pointed out to me is David's step 10 is basically doing steps 4 through 9 on your life today. You know, steps 4 through 9 are the tools for cleaning up our past, and guess what? They're the tools for living in the present. This is a walking around every day in your back pocket. You don't have to wait to do it. We've got it. We've got the tools for it. It was also pointed out to me, and then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Now that's a great little action right there, you know? And I need you guys to remind me of that, because I will call you up with my problem du jour, my resentment du jour, my fear du jour. Oh man, you're not gonna believe this, and the boss, and he said, and blah, 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 you know? And my sponsor will say, well, he says real spiritual stuff to me like, oh well. I hate the oh well. He'll say, you going to a meeting tonight? And I say, yeah, man, you know I'm going to a meeting tonight. Well, good. There's probably going to be someone there you can help tonight. Have a nice day. But then if I actually do turn my thoughts and my attention to people I can help, if you actually do that, just try it. You know, say a little prayer. What can I do? What can I do to be helpful to other people, Father? And then you just be quiet for a minute. My mind fills up. My mind absolutely fills up. You know, so-and-so picked up a white chip last week. You know, and I got that guy's number. I think I'll call him and find out how he's doing. You know, so-and-so was struggling. So-and-so's leaving the area. They're moving. They need help. My mother's going into surgery next week. She was nervous about that. Why don't I give her a call and offer her some reassurance? You know, my mind will just fill up if I'm willing to try, just willing to turn my thoughts and my attention to someone else. And it was pointed out to me that love and tolerance are action words. They're not feelings. They're not attitudes. They are actions. They are the act of loving, the act of practicing tolerance, the act of trying to keep my mouth shut when I really want to set you straight on something. You know, and I'm not good at that. I have to practice that because it's almost irresistible sometimes. So we've got a way of living. This is a jam-packed paragraph in here that basically tells me that I'm to be vigorous in this practice of my way of life and to continue to do the steps on my daily life.
We're just going to continue right under there, still on page 84. And we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So, these are the 10-step promises, I suppose. The people in AA like the 9th step promises better because they think it means they're going to get money. But these promises are really quite incredible because I'm somebody that was just so obsessed with alcohol. I didn't even know I was obsessed with it. If I wasn't drinking it, I was thinking about how I could cover up the mess that drinking it had caused, and then I was already tremendously, excitedly planning the next time and trying to get all the pieces together, the money, the guys, the booze, whatever, the drugs, get it all together for the next time. And that was really all I pretty much thought about that all the time. It was always somewhere in my mind, and I was kind of obsessed with it like that, and I didn't know that was an obsession. It's a thought that pushes all other thoughts out, and that's what it was. So for me, I'm not really somebody that ever had a long period of sobriety before I came to AA. I think the longest, one time I had a therapist that said I needed to stop drinking for a month, and I didn't drink for a month, but I was smoking weed every day. So just to take the edge off, you know, because like I said, I don't like reality. But anyway, I'm not really somebody that had a long period of sobriety, but I just felt very uncomfortable when I wasn't drinking. So this idea that I'm not fighting alcohol, I'm not using my willpower to stop drinking, I'm not sitting here after 15 years without a drink wishing I could go and drink, I'm not feeling tempted every time I see alcohol, this really is pretty incredible. And it's happened, I believe, as a result of taking the 12 steps of AA and continuing to try to apply them, however imperfectly, into my life. And I think this is a guaranteed program of action. It's not just for some people. I think anybody that does these actions up until this point will experience these promises. And that's certainly what I've seen in myself and in other people. And there have been times when I've had thoughts of drinking since I got sober. And at first they used to terrify me because I would think, well, AA's not working. Because I just thought, I mean, I wasn't saying, the thought wasn't I'm going to go and get drunk, but it would be a thought about alcohol. Like, what if I drink again or something like that? And I, over the years, verbalizing them to other people in AA, just, I always just talk about it as soon as it happens. What I've come to understand is that actually proves that this is working. Because when those thoughts come into this mind now, in the past I would always drink. And now I don't drink. Now I'm like, oh my God. So what that shows me is the thing I'm waiting on happening has already happened. It happened years ago. And it's continued to be kept alive by these simple actions. And that's being sane. And you know, in step one, it talks about this delusion. It talks about the delusion that I'm going to be like other people, or I am like other people. And that's with drinking. I always look at those guys that were drinking and think, why can't I be like them? They're not destroying their lives. But it's also for me in sobriety, the delusion that I'm like non-alcoholic people. Non-alcoholic people don't need to go to meetings, they don't need a sponsor, they don't need to do the steps. They can live on New Jersey Avenue in the house next to me and have all the stuff I've got, and they just seem to have it. And what the delusion is now in long-term sobriety is that I don't really need to do anything to maintain that. That I'm just like those dudes. So I don't need to go to the meeting. I don't need to reach out to people. So I think being sane is continuing to realize that I have alcoholism and that I need to take these simple actions on a regular daily basis in order to maintain my spiritual condition and hold on to my sobriety. Because for me, my life is built on a foundation of staying sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Take away staying sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and my life starts to fall apart very quickly. The marriage is going to go. She's not going to put up with me drunk. No way. I'll tell you that right now. The kids, I'm not. What kind of father am I going to be to my children? What kind of employee am I going to be? I mean, I'm not a very good one as it is. So, you know, are you kidding me? So seriously, you know, the delusion that I'm, because I haven't drank for a while, I'm like other people now, you know, that's a problem that's in the past. That's insane for me to start to fall into that again. So it talks about the problems being removed, and then it talks about being in fit spiritual condition. And fit spiritual condition, I thought meant that I feel happy all the time. Whatever that is, so I'm just constantly happy. That's me being in fit spiritual condition. But what I've actually come to realize over time, for me, fit spiritual condition is really talking about taking actions. This, for me, my understanding of it is that no matter what's going on in my life, I keep taking these simple actions. I keep going to meetings. I keep calling my sponsor. I stay willing to apply the steps in my life. I'm doing step 10, the stuff David was talking about. I'm in a home group, I'm participating. Even if it appears to me that my life is falling apart, I just keep doing these things. That's fit spiritual condition. It's not necessarily ecstatically happy every moment of every day, like Buddha or something like that. It's not necessarily like that for me. But I think it's like that for those people that have never had a bad day sober. David?
Well, yeah, and I had a lot of trouble with this sanity idea. When it was first presented to me, you know, why do I need to be restored to sanity? I'm a perfectly good guy. I have a logical mind. I understand things. I'm not insane, you know. I go back to that strawberry analogy. You know, if you think about if you have an allergy to something dramatic happens. You know, you eat a strawberry and your throat closes up and you go into shock, and if you don't get an epi or something, you're gonna die very quickly. Once that happens one time, that person has a tendency to stay away from strawberries, and they probably don't need therapy to do it. You know, it's just, hey, you want a strawberry? No, they're not good for me. I need to go to the hospital every time I have a strawberry. So no, thank you. So they're not sitting around thinking, you know, well, maybe it's the strawberries that are grown on the East Coast. Maybe I should just get South American strawberries, or maybe if I put them in a blended drink, that would be good. Strawberry ice cream. You know, I never had that reaction before. I'll have ice cream. Perhaps I shouldn't eat strawberries by myself. If I just do it with other people. That fairly obviously would be insane, right? But you substitute alcohol at, well, now wait a minute, we're talking about drinking now. So some of those may be good, you know, those may work out. So I'm nuts when it comes to alcohol. I'm clearly someone who should not drink. You know, when I drink, everything falls apart. I push everyone away from me. I can point to nothing. When I got here, I was still welcome in my mother's home. You know, I hadn't burned the whole thing to the ground. I still had a place at the Thanksgiving table. I still had a job. I still was allowed to drive the car that the company gave me. But I had shrunk my life down to basically just living by myself. And I would go out and seek the company of other people when it suited me, or not, if that suited me. And I had just shrunk my life down to basically me, what I felt like doing, and who I felt like doing it with whenever I felt like doing it. But there was no relationship there, just companions, really. You know, convenient companions. That was about all I was willing to be. Of course, I would tell you that I was willing to be so much more. Find some lucky girl and give her all the love in the world, you know. Really, all I, you know, God, I'm not capable of any of it. I just shrunk my life down to nothing. I was lonely, miserable, you know, and weird stuff starting to happen too, you know, on these little benders. And that stuff became more painful and more abhorrent and more appalling as time went on. And so the sanity, the restoration of sanity, basically is what, if I do think about drinking, that's what I think about. I think about the broken bones and the broken promises and the fact that drinking didn't give me any relief in the last several years of drinking. You know, I did come here with a desire not only to stop drinking, but God, you got to give me something else to live sober, to live comfortable, because I need relief. I have a sober problem too. I love the way Graham describes that. I have a terrible sobriety problem. You know, nothing's ever good enough. It's not right. There's not enough of anything. I'm restless, irritable, discontent wherever I am. I want to be somewhere else. She's nice, but she's not that nice. I'm sure there's a nicer one. This town. I moved here 25 years ago. I've always considered it a temporary stop. I just can't leave. So, for this time, sanity will have returned. We'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. And here's the bit that's amazing to me. We'll find that this has happened automatically. You see, all my life I tried to manage my alcoholism. I tried to manage my life, tried to manage my problems, tried to manage everything. And I'm going to find the right combination. I tried to do it with drinking. I tried to find the right combination of pills or days of the week or combinations, just beer, beer only, bottled beer, just bottled beer. That's it. I notice I get really sick on the draft beer, or I do really weird things on tequila. So I met a guy one night, and that was his strategy. He just drinks bottles of Budweiser, and he finds that he can manage and control. It's like, he's a genius. I'll try that, you know? And I keep ending up where I end up every time. So what I found in doing this is that it has happened. Just from being willing to show up here and do the things that you guys do, I've been delivered to a place where I'm not interested in drinking. It holds no charm for me. It holds no, you know, when I watch a beer commercial and the condensation rolls down the side, I'm not like, oh, the good old days. That would be so nice. Just on a hot day, really, you know. I mean, even if I did make it to the Corona commercial, I'll tell you what that would look like. I would be sitting on the beach going, this place is expensive. Can you believe how much it costs to get here? You know, and that guy looked at me funny. You know what I mean? What is he looking at? Waiter, did you see the way the waiter treated me? That son of a, you know, and that's what the Corona commercial really would look like. It wouldn't be any fun at all. I could be back in Norfolk, you know, in a dive bar, you know, and not spend so much money and have 10 days in front of me and not worry about planes. That's where I want to be. You know, so I'm in, I'm in paradise. I want to be back in Norfolk. So, but I find that this has been given to me without making a decision, without having to manage it, without having to control it. All of a sudden, I notice that I'm not interested in drinking. I would no more today stick my, you know, take a drink of beer than I would stick my hand in a box of poisonous snakes. It makes about as much sense to me. But that's not like a decision. That's not an intellectual exercise. That has been a gift. It's been a byproduct, you know? It's just been something that has been given to me. I don't know. I assume because I've been willing to do these things with you. But it's not because of some magical understanding, some page in the book I've never read before, you know? You know, some secret prayer maybe you guys will clue me in on one day when you deem me worthy, you know? It just hasn't happened. But this, there's this position of neutrality. And it is weird because I would say I'm neither cocky nor afraid, you know? I'm not tempting it. I'm not making beer runs for people. I'll be your designated driver because I've solved the liquor problem. You know what I mean? That holds no charm for me either. I find myself interested in doing other things, you know, just sort of naturally. So it's not a fight, it's not a struggle, it's not a management exercise, it's not an intellectual exercise, it's just the condition that I find myself in today. And that's how I would describe it. So I do feel like I'm in this neutral position. I don't hate alcohol, I don't hate people who drink. You want to get a rip on, go for it, you know, have a good time, enjoy yourself. It really doesn't bother me. I know what it is for me. It's just like the strawberries. I take a drink, I have a pretty good idea what that's going to look like. Broken bones and broken promises. And don't scare me with I'm going to die, because I could give a rat's backside whether I'm going to die or not, especially when I'm drinking. Is death all you got? Bring it. You know what I mean? I don't care. I'm drinking. Everything's fine. Right? So... yeah, fit spiritual condition.
Okay.
Go on the next one.
On the next paragraph, it's on page 85. And it just says, it's easy to light up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. So, again, it's talking about how easy it is to let up on the spiritual program of action. I told you already, I don't like work. I like easy, though. I like easy, and I'm going to do it as much as I can. And this analogy of resting on my laurels, you know, it's like I ran the race, I got through the steps, I did the first nine, and I'm done now. And I can just kind of bask in the glory of soberness, you know, and do whatever people that are sober do. And I really did have that experience. My first sponsor took me through the steps in a 2 or 3 month period. I made a bunch of amends to people. Then I kind of just sat back. And that's when I really got to experience alcoholism sober for the first time. And it was quite a shock, because I really didn't know that was going to happen. I had really unrealistic expectations, because I'm not a guy that like thinks small. That's never been something I've suffered from, thinking small. I'm like, I want a palace, you know? I want a country and I want to run it, you know, or maybe a planet, you know, and lots of everything. That's always in my mind. And so I was very disappointed with what I saw as my lack of progress after taking the steps to the best of my ability. I really thought I should be a lot better than what I was, and my life should look a lot better and definitely feel a lot better than what it did. And so now I'm in AA, I've done the steps, and I'm basing my life on how I feel. And so if it doesn't feel right, then I haven't done the steps right, or I'm not in the right home group, or I don't have the right sponsor, or maybe I need some outside help. Yeah, that's what it looks like for me. And thank God that there's some people in AA that are saying, this really has got very little to do with how you feel, Graham. Sorry. We don't really care how you feel. How about you come and help us put these chairs out at this meeting? And that guy over there, he looks kind of lost. Why don't you go and talk to him and see how he's doing? Why don't you call some people? Why don't you say some simple prayers? How about we take a meeting into the hospital? How about we take a meeting into this rehab? Let's go and see those guys in the jail. Why don't we try and get a meeting going up there? These are the kind of things that I have to do to get out of myself. Because otherwise, I'm just going to sit and spin round and round and round in this little box up here. How do I feel? I don't feel good. Why don't you feel good? I don't know. I don't know. It's my mom. It's her fault. She never loved me. And I'm off again. I'm all wrapped up in my head again in that little lonely world. And it tells me that I'm headed for trouble if I do that. And I have done it in sobriety. There's several times in recovery I've really got way off track. And I've really pulled back. I never drank and I never completely stopped going to AA, but I got very distracted from AA. And this is something people in AA don't like to talk about this. They get really upset if you talk about it in meetings. If you talk about the reality, where are all the 30-year sober people in this room? Where are they? I would argue that most people in this room have less than 5 years sober, probably. And the question is, what happened to all those other people? Oh, Graham's been so negative. We don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about God and being happy. Okay, that's fine. You can talk about God and being happy, but where are all those people? And what happens after you get sober and do the steps? What happens to those people? And I've been in AA for 15 years, and what I see happening, and I see it in myself, it's that daily delusion. And the delusion comes back that I'm like other people. Therefore, I don't need to be so vigilant about AA because I'm actually like these people. I've got a college degree. I've got a house. I've got 2 cars. I'm married. I've got 2 beautiful kids. I'm busy. I'm a big deal. Look at me. I'm a big deal. And I don't need to do that stuff. Those people in AA are a bunch of whingers and losers. I don't need to go there. Or maybe it just happens that I just gradually cut back and pull away. And that is the well-worn path out of Alcoholics Anonymous for the few alcoholics that get here and get sober. It's tragic. So I think it absolutely is what we have to talk about. Because I need to make sure that doesn't happen to me. Because when I came to AA, I was pretty miserable and lonely and suicidal. I didn't really have much of a life. But now I have a very full, wonderful life built on the simple actions of recovery. And there's so much more to lose now. And it's not just for me, it's for these other people that are somehow dependent on me, or at least it seems that way. So I can't really stress this enough. The power of that delusion in recovery that I am actually not really an alcoholic, or if I am, I'm a special kind of alcoholic that doesn't need to do these things that these other guys need to do. Because I'm special and important. And it says again, it's a subtle fault. And other people have said to me that they wish the word patient was in there as well. It's a patient fault. This really is a marathon. It's not a sprint. This is a long-term situation I find myself in. And everything's on the table. My life's on the table. But I don't really like to think like that because that's kind of heavy, you know? That's a bummer. I don't want to think about that. That's a fun. So... But that really is what I'm playing for. I'm playing for my life, and it says I'm not cured of alcoholism. So, to get back into the solution, then it flips it round. Talks about I'm going to get into trouble if I ease up on these actions. So what is it I can do to make sure that I stay in Alcoholics Anonymous? And it talks about carrying God's will into all of my activities. So how do I do that? How do I carry God's will into all of my activities? Well, I don't really think of it in those terms. That's not that there's anything wrong with those terms, but I think really how I perceive that today is I do these things in AA, and I try to keep doing them each day. I pray, you know, pretty much like it asked me to in the book, you know, page 86 and that. I do that in the morning. I get my day going, and then I call other people in AA sometimes to, I suppose, do a bit of 10th step, my 10th step, and sometimes to heal theirs. I suppose there's give and take with the people I call, and some people call me. And then I try to get to a meeting. I'm not able to go to a meeting every, well, I choose not to go to a meeting every day. But going to meetings is important, and when I'm at meetings, reaching out to new people. and just doing the things that we do, having a sponsor, and continuing to apply the steps in my life today, and being active in a home group. I think that's how I carry the vision of God's will into all of my activities. And it seems to bleed over into the rest of my life when I'm doing that. I can't really think of an instance when I've tried to be, when I've successfully used my willpower to become a better person. I've tried to do that a lot. I've just tried to be good, Graham. And I really can't do it for any more than 2 or 3 days. In fact, now it's not even anything like that. It's like 2 or 3 hours. And then I'm back to being Graham again. So I hope I can just give up with that. I'm fed up trying to be perfect and good. And I think there's some sort of acceptance that's come of myself. This is the way I am, you know? And I'm just going to, like, let it all hang out there. This is the way I am. And there's a lot of bits of me that suck, okay? And if that's news to you, I'm sorry to disappoint you. And then there's other parts of me that are absolutely wonderful. There really are. There's some fantastic parts of me that I really like and other people like too. But there's these other parts of me that just suck a big one. And, you know, so that just seems to be the way I am. And that doesn't mean that I can't be helpful to people. It doesn't mean that I can't keep doing these actions on a daily basis and try to be of help to other people. And that's what a juice in Alcoholics Anonymous is. The juice is not in these steps. The juice is not in me sitting down saying, oh, I need to do an inventory, I'm not feeling right. That's not the juice, that's selfish. The juice is not in doing a big 10-page journal every night about how I feel and how my mother treated me when I was a kid. That's not the juice in Alcoholics Anonymous. The juice in Alcoholics Anonymous is going up to that guy after the meeting who's sitting there like that, and in his head he's thinking, I don't even know if I'm sitting right, everybody's looking at me, should I put my legs here or should I put them over there, and just saying, hey, how you doing, I'm Graham, nice to meet you, you new to AA, no, you know, and giving him a meeting list and talking to him. That's the juice in AA. The juice in AA is taking calls from people whose lives are falling apart in sobriety, like mine has on several occasions, and just listening to them and sharing my experience back. It's been of help to other people. So these steps put me in a position where I can do that. And just to finish up, like David said, I think this has to become a way of giving, a way of living and a way of giving. If I'm coming to AA to take and to be made better and to get better and to feel better, then what I see has definitely happened to me. AA gets kind of boring. It becomes kind of dull. And I almost missed the whole point of AA. The whole point of AA is to do these things so that I can help other people like me with alcoholism in AA. That's the point, and that's what keeps me sober, and that's what keeps my life firing on all cylinders. But that doesn't make sense because I'm so selfish. And I'm like, that doesn't sound very good. What about me, David?
Yeah, I mean that's my story. I mean, I'll tell a piece of it because it's a value. This is all we're going to read tonight.
This is it. Yeah.
I came to AA 30 years ago for the first time. You know, that's a long time ago. I'm 52 years old on my last birthday, and I didn't want what you had to offer. It took me 6 years to take that first step. 28 years old. So my 23 years of sobriety divides up into rough thirds. The first third, I doubled down on everything that we talked about. I accepted everything that you guys had to offer. I got the sponsor, I got the home group, I got a service position, I got busy in AA. Pretty soon I was helping other people, sponsoring guys, busy in AA, doing the steps, making the amends. My relationships are changing. Suddenly I'm a son, able to be a son to my father. And then a very interesting thing happened. Everything I ever wanted out of life came my way. By about 5 years sober, all I ever wanted, you know, I wanted a marriage, I wanted a business, I wanted a son, I wanted a boy. I always had a fantasy of having a son, you know, and I always imagined my life with this boy, and I was going to be the perfect dad too, you know. It was just going to be an amazing, angelic sort of an experience. But everything I ever wanted out of my life, a business dropped in my lap. And I didn't engineer it. I didn't design it. It didn't come out of my own creativity. It just jumped in my lap, and you guys gave me the courage to say, "I'll try." Okay, you know. I mean, it was just enough, and then the money starts rolling in. pretty little wife comes along. She wants three kids. I want three kids. Ooh, that's about all I checked. And so down the road we go. All I ever wanted was a son. I got three of them. Three boys came my way. Little by slowly, and I never made a decision to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. I never disavowed my alcoholism. I never thought it'd be a good idea to drink. None of that stuff. I never thought had a bad opinion about it, people in AA. We had a big AA wedding. You know, my best man was in AA. An AA did the flowers, and another AA. A guy in AA who had failed a suicide attempt a week before that did the cake for our wedding with bandages on his wrist. You know, he's like, it was really important for me to be at your wedding, David. And I was just like, right on, man. You know, I mean, you know, this is just amazing, right? And so the baby comes along, and you know, and he's colicky. He has needs. I'm signing a mortgage on a house, and suddenly I'm a big boy. Suddenly I got property. Then I got a business. People are asking my opinion about things. I'm a consultant, for God's sakes. I get paid for my opinion. I mean, that's an alcoholic job in the first place, right? You know? And so all this stuff starts rolling my way. And what happens? What did David do? In his expression of gratitude for the program that saved his life, you know? Redoubled my efforts in Alcoholics Anonymous? No. I just went and enjoyed myself. I just went and did the things that I'd always dreamt of doing, you know, and sobriety lost its priority. I just leaked away little by slowly. I had a sponsor die on me. I wasn't in a hurry to hire another one. The home group, they didn't understand me there anyway. And I just leaked away. And like I say, I never disavowed it. So I got to experience almost seven years of sobriety, you know, no recovery. No, none of the stuff that we've talked about tonight happening in my life. But it wasn't like a light switch either, you know? The prayers didn't stop right away, you know? I didn't reject every, you know, the idea of being helpful to people. I was leading the Cub Scout troop. I was helpful to my neighbors. All my neighbors would probably tell you that David's a nice guy. But I'm being hypercritical to my wife. She can't really do much right. I'm not really impressed with the job she's doing with the children. So it was really my duty to point that out constantly. No? Nobody? All right. So I just was doing the best I could. And what I didn't understand was I was an alcoholic who needed to be in recovery. And I was living like an alcoholic who needed a drink and wasn't going to have one. You know? So that's what I did. And so 14 years without a drink, I end up suicidal, homicidal, depending on self-esteem, that fulcrum point there. I had a little bit of self-esteem, it was homicide. Yeah, that's us. That was the condition, that's what I had with that, but I'm not drinking, you know what I mean? But I'm back just as miserable, just as frightened, just as lost, just as out of answers as I was when I first came here to Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank God I did get here and somebody knew what was wrong with me. It was like, that's an interesting story about your wife, David. That's an interesting story about the business, David. Why don't we go ahead and do Alcoholics Anonymous? And I did, and I recommitted to the simple actions, and hopefully this last 7 years have been they've been a little better. I know my marriage is better, I know I'm better. That's another thing that I noticed is I'm not that interested in how I feel. Because I certainly don't feel that good, you know, all the time, you know? But I'm not interested. Yeah, who cares? So, we going back to this paragraph, it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. I definitely want to stay sober today on what I did yesterday. I want my past, I was really busy in AA last week, so I'm just going to throttle back this week. You know what I mean? It's just bask in the glow of all that, you know, wonderfulness. You know, I love Bob Darrell gives the analogy to the back of a toilet bowl. He says, you know, it's like my spiritual condition. It might be empty at the moment. You know, I've just heard of somebody's fifth step, man. I've just done some prayers. I just heard something in a meeting, or somebody hung up the phone and said, man, thank you for talking to me, David. Thank you so much, man. You saved my life. Thank you. There's a feeling that comes with that. You got to be on the other end of the phone. You got to take that call for that to happen. And it doesn't happen that often, but sometimes somebody says, my God, I really needed to talk to you, man. Thank you. And you hang up the phone and you think, Wow, I think that was useful. I think that was helpful to somebody. So there you are, you know, in this wonderful God moment, you know, but then the bowl just starts filling back up, you know. Man, did you see that guy didn't even put any money in the basket? What's the deal with that, you know? Do you hear what she shared at the meeting? I mean, that's crazy, you know. And the chatter just starts right away. So I can't stay sober on what I did yesterday. I've tried. I certainly can't stay happy. I might stay dry, you know, but I don't want to live the way that I was living anymore. The problem is we're not cured of alcoholism. This daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. You want to have a good time, go to an open discussion meeting and throw the topic out there. Hey, how do you guys maintain your spiritual condition? And just listen and see if anybody talks about doing the steps. I don't know. Don't do it. Never mind. But I guarantee you what you're not going to hear is the next two sentences where Bill basically very coherently says on the maintenance of our spiritual condition, and then he tells us what that looks like. What that looks like, David, is every day you carry the vision of God's will into all your activities. My prayer is, how can I serve you, Father? Thy will, not be mine, be done. These are the thoughts that I'm invited to have constantly. What if that was my constant thought? I'm a long way from it. I'm a long way from it, but I believe this is the practice. Father, I'm all up in my head. Your will, not mine, be done. Take this. Show me. Teach me. Guide me. Take me. Use me. What do you want me to do with this? Give me the strength to carry, the knowledge of what you want me to do and the strength to carry it out. These are the thoughts that must go with us constantly. And then we can exercise our willpower along this line. It's the proper use of will. Right? So it's not, once again, it's not an intellectual exercise. It's not a knowledge thing. It's a practice thing. I'm reminded once again, to my own disappointment, that I'm not running the show. My input in my own life is not really being sought by anybody. What's your opinion of your life, David? Nobody cares. My children certainly want to know what it is I'm going to do for them. I'm certain my wife is interested in what I'm going to contribute to that home, you know. I know that the mortgage company is interested in if I'm going to pay that on time, you know. So there's some actions that I have to take on a daily basis. And Graham, I'm not going to go over everything Graham said, but there are very specific things that we're asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're all simple things, you know. Are you a member of a home group, David? Yep. What are you doing for them? I show up most of the time. Oh, well, I want you to be one of the guys that makes that home group happen. Why don't you show up early and help them out? Help them with the setup. Why don't you greet that guy that looks uncomfortable? You know? So there's lots to be done. And AA gives us quite a few boxes to check. And whenever I'm disturbed, it's like it's such a short checklist. Have I prayed today? Does my sponsor know I'm alive? What step am I on? Have I talked to other alcoholics today? Am I trying to help other people today? You know, have I been to a meeting today? I always come up short somewhere. And that redirects my thoughts and my actions. And I'll make one other point, this very simple, practical way for, like, how do I work a 10th step? I mean, we've talked about it tonight. But as Graham shared, there are people in my life that know everything about me today. My sponsor is not the only one. But there are people that I can talk to that I trust them. I trust them. Why do I trust them? Because they're trustworthy? I don't know. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. But I have had the experience of being able to tell them just how frightened I am, just how resentful I am, just how insane I am, just how lustful I am, just how greedy I am, just how lazy I am on a daily basis. And I can tell them that, and they'll say stuff like, yeah, me too. You know? And in that environment, I'm free to tell you who I am and what's going on with me, and I get free of it. Somehow I get free of it. At least I know what's true, and I'm not hiding anything. So talking to other people, you know, I would tell everybody, talk to three alcoholics every day. You know, that's all I would advise anybody to do. But that's what that looks like for me, and that's what it does for me on a daily basis. You want to clean any of that up?
We're done.
All right. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influence that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? John.
I am John, an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
Less than 2 weeks away, Saturday, June 22nd, will be the annual Gratitude in Action event at Ghent United Methodist Church. Doors open at 9:30. We will have the delegates report. We're going to have three workshops. We're going to have a speaker, and we're going to have free food. We'll have a full-blown cookout. So please mark your calendars and attend if you can. Saturday, June the 22nd.
Thanks, John.
Kevin.
My name is Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kevin.
The after-hours meeting is held every night of the week at 10:30 at the East Memphis Center. The East Memphis Center is at 1153 Harmony Road. Please make it out there. It's a very, very good meeting. And it needs some support from all of you.
Any others?
This home group has a supper and a speaker on the 8th of July. It's Monday, the 8th of July. And there's a speaker coming in from DC. And we will eat at 6 o'clock in this room, and the speaker will speak at 7. Everybody's welcome.
There should be flyers on the back table for that event. Really looking forward to that. Hope everybody feels welcome to attend. Any others? Hello, Thomas.
On Wednesday the 26th at the church and group, there'll be a celebration, I think it's 39? And it'll be a potluck. The potluck will start at 7 and the speaker will be at 8, and there will also be birthday celebrations coming as well.
Thank you. The Simple Actions Group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. All right, and just so that we can welcome you by first name, is there anybody in the room tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? Can we just get to know you a little bit?
My name's Mike.
Mike, welcome. Anybody else? All right. Sponsorship is your in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anybody willing to be a sponsor, please raise their hand. There is literature available generally on the back table. Please see a home group member if you'd like to buy a book. And I'd like to thank everybody who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. And all are invited to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at
a Mexican place. I don't know what it's called. What's it called?
Plaza del Sol
on 21st and 22nd and Colonial.
22nd and Colonial. And just as an aside, I'd like for anybody to tell me how the audio was after the meeting. If anybody had trouble hearing, anybody had any... Okay, it's all good. Is anybody inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164 before we close? Go, Leslie.
Yep.
Close. Margaret, will you lead us?
Who's largely in charge and keeps us out of bars?
Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Thanks. Good to see you.
Woo-hoo.